Coming up next on Free Radio, Bathurst Beers Broadsides, the Sunday Civil Rights Show on what's happening here in Santa Cruz. A special guest, Andrea Pritchett Quintus from Santa Cruz, and actually quite a variety of folks, including an update from the anti-war rallies and what's going on around the town. Stay with us. It's March 21st, 2004.
I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. His life was held forfeit for defying the throne. The cause is noble. He died for what's right. But it can't ease the pain in a home that's so lonely at night. I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. They call him an outlaw. His location's unknown. The last time I saw him, took the few pounds I had, and left me this baby, who'll not know her dad. I married a hero, now I'm living alone. My love's bound to wither behind barbed wire and stone. They say he gets my letters, but I've not much to write. And our bed seems so large now, so empty at night. And I curse the injustice that keeps us apart. How could it have been wrong to surrender my heart? Will our children be heroes and widows in time? I'd gladly take his place, but would he take mine? I married a hero. Now I'm living alone. And I worked at the two jobs till our babies were grown. How I grieve at the same fate awaits them as well. My love rests in peace now, and I live in hell. And I curse the injustice that keeps us apart.
That was Ann Feeney, I Married a Hero, from her album Ann Feeney and Friends. That's Ann Feeney, F-E-E-N-E-Y, if you want to catch her on the internet. She's got lots of great albums, great songs, and of course a great voice. You're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM and 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz, also on the net, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and I've got three live guests coming at us this morning on my long morning show. With me in the studio, kind of boning up and waiting to speak patiently, is Quintus Cornish, who's going to be talking about the plight of a petitioner who's confronted with ill-informed authorities. He's going to be talking about that in a bit. We have a time crunch, though, for Berkeley Cop Watch's Andrea Pritchard, who is expected to be contacting us shortly. She doesn't have much time. She has to leave, I think, within 10 or 15 minutes from where she's situated up in Berkeley. And I ran into her yesterday at the anti-war rally in Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco. And she's still as fearless, tireless, articulate, and unstoppable as ever when I first met her in 1990 here at the Homeless Congress that we had. We threw a Homeless Congress here in 1990 in the summer, trying to beat back police harassment and institutional criminalization of the poor then as we are now. And actually, that was the first year of Berkeley Cop Watch. It's continued as a growing institution in Berkeley, still fighting against all odds up there. And she's going to give us an update on what's happening on a variety of fronts. I actually did a longer interview with her at that time, yesterday, I should say, when I was up in San Francisco. And I'm going to be playing that later in the show if there's time. And she'll be just giving us a brief kind of contact. And she also, I want to also mention that Santa Cruz is forming its own cop watch here. And that will be happening, I guess, if you go on the Indie Media website, you can get more information about the forming Berkeley Cop Watch, which is going to be Santa Cruz Cop Watch, which is going to be initiated by Berkeley Cop Watch Video, which Andrea and others at Cop Watch put together. How to deal with the police when you're approached, what you have to say. Do you have to answer such questions as, what's your name, what are you doing, let's have a little chat, that sort of thing. For those who are interested in that kind of stuff, there's a great website which Katya Komisarek has put a lot of information on. Katya's a lawyer, originally a peace activist who broke into the, I guess it was Vandenberg or Lompoc facility down there and began dismantling a nuclear warhead. And she was arrested, served 2 years in jail, became a lawyer, got her degree at Harvard, I think while she was in jail, or soon thereafter. And she actually defended me in one of my cases in the mid-90s when I was arrested for trespass up at the housing that should have gone to poor and homeless people and needy families and the Presidio, the Wherry housing it was called, Wherry, the old Presidio housing that was abandoned by the Army. But instead, of course, they've allowed it to deteriorate. They've ignored those concerns. I think there is some student housing that they put in finally, or they used it for that purpose. But various religious groups and I tried to reclaim it, and she was good enough to defend us when we went to court after occupying that housing. I think I got some community service out of that. First time I ever did federal community service. But she's got a great website around issues of what to do when you're arrested. She's written a whole book. I think it's called Beat the Heat or something like that. And go on the internet, the Indie Media website that I always recommend, www.santacruz.indiemedia, to find out about Santa Cruz Cop Watch. And then I guess you can Google for Katya Komisarek. I'll also try to give you the spelling of that name a little later in the show when I'm clearer on what it is. You might look up Beat the Heat. I think that's the name of her book, put out by AK Press. Anyway, it looks like we're not necessarily getting an incoming call from Andrea Pritchard, I should say. Some people like to be called Andrea, some people like to be called Andrea, and you just got to remember which is which. I have some problems with that sometimes, but hey. Passing years have their toll. Also today on the show, we're going to have Paul Sanford. That'll be around noon. Paul is a local attorney who defended John Maurer in the Fuck the Pigs case, as it's rather brashly known. That's a homeless man, John Maurer, who was harassed by police repeatedly for essentially being downtown with a little cup. You know, he's panhandling. He wasn't panhandling abusively by any account. He was simply panhandling, but the police decided, as they do to many people and have increasingly been doing in the last few years, to kind of make it uncomfortable and unpleasant for him. So he eventually put on a little sign after he'd gotten four tickets that said, "Fuck the pigs." And he didn't shout it out. He simply explained it to people when they asked him. But the police then gave him another ticket for the sign, "Fuck the pigs," claiming it was panhandling with obscene language. Of course, there is a First Amendment which allows you to use strong expletives in situations that where it calls it's called for. This is the United States. We're not talking about Catholic boarding school, although perhaps Councilmember Fitzmaurice would prefer that we use those kinds of rules. I don't know. Or Ed Porter, who's turning the downtown into a hall monitor situation with his downtown ordinances. Anyway, Sanford successfully pushed the city attorney to drop these charges. And he's going to be going to Washington, I guess, next week to defend or to attack the under God provision of the Pledge of Allegiance, which Michael Newdow is challenging. We're going to talk with him about that. Looks like we have an incoming call, and we're going to go to the phones. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Andrea.
Hey, of the notorious Berkeley Cop Watch.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Well, welcome to the air, and I know that you gave me a big chunk of your time yesterday, which we recorded, and we're going to hopefully be playing later today, so I'm going to try to ask you questions that don't duplicate what you spoke about then.
Sure.
I know that you talked about the police dog issue in Berkeley quite extensively. We had a police dog here in Santa Cruz, and I think we were able to get him off the mall anyway. Nice dog in many ways, but, you know, as you pointed out, you never can tell what they're going to do, those German Shepherd dogs.
Well, that's the whole point, to try to get them off the mall, so to speak.
Yeah, get them off the mall. I mean, again, as I said, we'll be going into, you into that, really, with great detail, and I think, I liked it. I think it's really educational. I'm going to play it later. You talked a bit about the Berkeley City Council. We didn't talk a lot about the anti-war movement in Berkeley and how it's affecting, whether there's much in terms of police repression around it, what the campus protest situation is. You mentioned that the campus is kind of quiescent, I think.
Yeah, it hasn't really emerged as a real anti-war center as yet.
Your specialty is Cop Watch, and you probably have somewhat a recollection of what you spoke about yesterday. How's Berkeley Cop Watch been doing in the last decade? You started small, and have you gotten big? Are you still small? What's the story? How many people are involved? Give me a kind of a thumbnail sketch.
Well, the great thing that's happened is that a lot of Cop Watch organizations have sprung up around the country. We visited some of them, particularly in Cincinnati and in Denver. But, there's grassroots efforts happening. I mean, Austin, New York, Georgia, Minnesota, Seattle. There's all kinds of community-based responses to police misconduct. And I think what's happening is that, since the Rodney King incident, so many years ago, I think there was a lot of interest in dealing with police accountability. But I think, people tried legislative approaches. In the wake of the Rodney King beating and riots, there was several, legislative proposals put through the state legislature. I think eight of them, but none of them passed. And so people have tried to change laws. They've tried to, do lawsuits. They've tried to file complaints and so forth. But at the end of the day, what we see is more and more police misconduct, and less accountability. So I think it's finally coming home to people that really, in order to address police accountability, it's something that has to happen in our neighborhoods, on the street, day to day. And it's not really something that the system is going to correct on its own. Sadly, I think the collusion between the district attorneys and the police departments and the city councils sort of preclude any real remedy coming out of the courts. So it becomes a matter of what we as individual citizens are prepared to do. And I think more and more people are getting kind of getting that message and making their own way. So that's exciting. So Cop Watch, we don't have like a big central administration. one of our philosophies. You know, we're all volunteers and we collect donations and try to do our work in that way, because we also don't want to be formed by the 501c3 nonprofit model. You know, police accountability, you know, the issue of police conduct, that's where the rubber meets the road. That is probably the most controversial issue when it comes down to funding and talking to people about, you know, where they really, where their loyalties really lie and what they really believe the state is capable of. So it's damn near impossible to get funded from these foundations anyway. But we also want to be independent when we approach the work. We don't want to have to, you know, smooth, you know, what can I say, round off the edges and make it all nice for people. I mean, the ugly fact is that we have an insanely unjust society, and we have, and it takes a lot of police to kind of maintain the status quo that is becoming ever, ever more unjust. So what can I say? I think Hopwatch is growing. I mean, in Berkeley, we've experienced a lot of growth. We have an ongoing class every Monday with university students, and they're learning about, you know, the role of police and the history and, you know, taking up issues like community policing or community control of police and really studying. We also have shifts that are going out, probably, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 shifts of students and others who actually go out and monitor the police.
With video cameras, tape recorders.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, we're fostering, Santa Cruz is trying to get a, is trying to, we have one member who's really trying hard to organize something in Santa Cruz.
And he has your video scheduled for next month. A showing, which I guess will be the kickoff for the Santa Cruz Cop Watch.
Yeah, yeah. So there's, if people want information about that effort, they can call us at Cop Watch here in Berkeley, and we can refer you to the organizer for that. So you can call us at 510-644-2613. We also have, last night, folks were cop watching in East Palo Alto, and we're trying to foster a community effort to get that going on a regular basis. And that's exciting. I mean, East Palo Alto is a rough police force, to say the least. And we also, we're working with Pueblo. We're working with other groups in Oakland, trying to see if we can't choose just a small area to kind of patrol and develop some community consensus about how they want to deal with their police department.
Any updates on how things went with the anti-war protests yesterday in terms of how they interacted with police in your area? I imagine most of the protests were over in San Francisco, but where you and I were. But have you heard anything? And perhaps in the last year, do you have any kind of commentary on the police and political protest and how Cop Watch has interacted with that?
Well, one of the things that we encountered was, you know, with this whole Homeland Security thing and the whole effort to do surveillance, that the California Anti-Terrorism Information Center and, you know, federal agencies, they're trying to cooperate with local law enforcement. They're trying to get local law enforcement to do surveillance. For example, Berkeley Police Department was asked by the FBI to locate 2 Arab UC students. And we found out that the Berkeley Police Department actually did go to these people's houses. Now, what the chief said, he said, oh, well, we went there when we noticed that the names on the mailbox were different, so we just left. But what his comments indicate is that they actually did begin to do the work of the FBI in locating people of Arab descent. And that's really frightening. And I think that's one area where we, on a local level, can really struggle with our city councils and really struggle with our police departments to say, no, we're not going to cooperate in this dragnet and in this, you know, incredible nationwide racial profiling that they're trying to implement.
Andrea, in Santa Cruz, Mayor Scott Kennedy has essentially put the kibosh on any stronger city laws that would, let's say, do what Arcata has done, which essentially make it a criminal offense for a city employee to cooperate in unconstitutional implementation of the Patriot Act. Are you familiar with the Arcata situation?
I've heard about it. I don't have the details.
We interviewed Dave Meserve, who's a council member up there, who actually put that forward and got it successfully passed. It's one of the strongest provisions. I think San Francisco has a similar provision, not quite as strong. But Santa Cruz specifically diluted its law on the motion of then Vice Mayor, now Mayor Kennedy, last November before last when it first came forward, and a group called the Bill of Rights Defense Committee has been trying to put forward stronger provisions so that, you know, there actually is a requirement that the police not cooperate on pain of some kind of criminal penalty or right. possibly not being funded. I mean, there are different kind of avenues that have been suggested. What's the story in Berkeley with that?
Berkeley passed a resolution saying that it didn't support the Patriot Act. Berkeley has not been in the forefront of that struggle. But I think it's also important for people to remember that even though you pass some kind of ordinance or something like that, I mean, you're talking about a culture. You're talking about a police culture. And so although the city council may forbid it and the people may be against it, you know, if a local law enforcement official is tapped by a federal agent to say, hey, can you help us out? You know, I'm not convinced that they won't. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems is that our police departments have taken on this aura of secrecy and like they're involved in national security and stuff. So even getting documents from the police department is like pulling teeth. So it's very hard to track what the actual level of collaboration is between the local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies. So, again, we can put forward these proposals, but at the end of the day, we have to think about how it affects us in our homes, in our neighborhoods, and how we can, you know, protect Arab and Muslim people that we know, you know, people in our very communities.
Berkeley Copwatch has a website, right?
We do. It's www.berkeleycopwatch.org.
And that contains a lot of phone numbers, information about training classes, opportunities to purchase your recent video, things of that sort, right?
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Lots of articles, too, the previous Copwatch reports, our handbook, lots of information.
I'd be happy to keep talking to you, but I know you said you were kind of pressed for time. What's your time situation?
I got a few more minutes, and then I have to kind of go.
Okay. Is there something you want to elaborate on yourself that you feel you haven't had a chance to do?
Well, you know, I guess the thing that weighs most heavily on my mind is that, what can I say, we tend to approach these police issues one by one. We wait till somebody gets killed. We wait till some horror, you know, we see some videotape on the TV and so forth. And what's really sad is that there's always a great cry after some incident, and people will push, and then it fades away until the next one comes up. And we on the left have had this sort of reactionary approach to police accountability and police misconduct that has left us running in circles, and I'm not sure that it's gained us a whole lot of ground. And what I'm trying to put out to the community is that, the slogan, no justice, no peace, has been echoing for years. And my question is, okay, well, how do we make some justice? Because I don't want to wait for them, because I think it's going to be a long wait. And I think that the question that we rarely ask ourselves is, well, what is justice? What does it look like? You know, we spend billions of dollars a year on this quote-unquote justice system that, you know, is a crapshoot, really. At best, at worst, it's sort of a systematic way of subduing and sidelining the people of color and low-income people. But I'm trying to figure out how we can stop calling the police. Because when we call the police, we invite misconduct. And if we could figure out in our communities how to address the concerns in the community ourselves, I believe that we could reduce the numbers of calls for service, reduce the probability of police misconduct, and begin to foster the kind of unity in our communities that is local and is international.
Are you thinking perhaps of something like the Black Panther Party's organizing in the late 60s?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're certainly a model. I mean, what I'm hearkening to is more like in South Africa, when apartheid was falling but hadn't been completely done away with, folks got together in what they called, you know, justice committees. So at that time in the townships, they were saying, no, we don't want any police, we don't want any soldiers, blah, blah, blah. But there was still crime. There were still these issues. And again, I think the left really has to take seriously these issues of of what's going on in the communities, because we can't effectively organize against police brutality when half of the community is still going, we need more police. So we have to gain some unity. But what they were doing in South Africa is they were saying, okay, no police, no soldiers, and they would get together in council, and if I had a complaint, say, oh, somebody stole my bicycle, I would go to this committee and I would say, somebody stole my bicycle. Either I would get help locating who did it, or we would mediate the conflict. I can mediate it with whoever. Now, there's a lot of buy-in that has to happen. There's a lot of, you know, creative thought that needs to occur about how to make neighborhood groups, you know, right now, effective and useful for all the people, the young people and the older people. What happens right now is that most of our neighborhood organizations are organized by the police. And so if you're not a supporter of the police, you generally don't find yourself there. But what that divides our communities, it sets up a, you know, who's in, who's out kind of structure that perpetuates this this disunity and allows the police to exploit that disunity.
Didn't Berkeley in the early 70s do some kind of organizing of the sort you mentioned? I mean, of course, there was a strong police department, but there was also a strong initiative that initially provided for disciplinary control over the police by the Berkeley Police Review Board, the Police Review Commission, which was thrown out by the courts. But there was a strong movement in the early 70s to divide the Berkeley police force up into three smaller forces,
right,
and so
right.
forth.
That was called the Community Control Initiative. And that was put together, I think it was the Red Guerrilla Family and the Panthers supported it. Various factions supported this idea of, yeah, decentralizing the police department and having all the main leadership of the police department elected by the communities. The problem with the proposal was that it divided Berkeley up into sort of the rich people in the hills, the campus community, and South and West Berkeley, which was predominantly people of color. And at that time, when the talk was about integration and so forth, a lot of people in the left were against this proposal because they felt like it perpetuated segregation, and that, you know, if you have an all white neighborhood with that has its own police department and an all black neighborhood that has its own police department, that they thought that was a recipe for conflict.
Andrea, do you appear regularly on the radio?
I don't.
Because I would like to invite you to do a regular piece on this show every week, every other week, every month, kind of continuing these themes you've mentioned, as well as doing an update on what's going on in Berkeley. Do you think you can fit it in?
Sure, I'd be happy to try.
That would be great, because, see, I think you're talking about broader issues that a lot of people down here are interested in Santa Cruz, and I think that Berkeley is, maybe it's past its prime as a radical organizing area. Maybe not. Maybe there's a new dawn ahead. But, you know, certainly there's people up there who've had a lot of experience and are working hard on these issues like you. And, frankly, I want to hear more about what you have to say on these issues.
Well, all these topics, I'd be happy to try. I mean, I think, you know, I encourage the people who work with Cop Watch to really study history and to really study, you know, the issues that are happening now. It's you know, in Cop Watch we have this message that all you have to do is watch and write it down. And that's true. But in order to move things forward, I think it definitely takes a lot of creative thought and a lot of informed discussion to really move things on.
I'll be playing your segment probably, perhaps between 11 and 12, the longer discussion we had yesterday, in case you get bored and happen to want to check it out on a computer up there, www.freakradio.org. We've been talking with Andrea Pritchard of Berkeley Cop Watch, who I just was able to perhaps ring a possible promise. I don't know, maybe a hope that you can do some future regular reporting from Berkeley.
Well, sure, definitely give me a call. I'm certainly open to that.
Hey, and again, for those who want to reach Cop Watch, it's 510-644-2613.
Actually, it's 548-0425.
548-0425.
Yeah.
What was that other number I just...
That was someone's home number.
Whoops, sorry. Okay, 510-548-0425 for Berkeley Cop Watch. Thanks, Andrea. Any final words?
No, just keep up the great work, Robert. Thank you for all the incredible work that you're doing down there.
Yeah. Well, You too.
All right, you take care.
Thanks, Andy.
Bye-bye.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. We're going to turn next to Quintus Cornish and his petitioning experiences, run-ins with some unfriendly or inappropriate police behavior, perhaps, and the plight of a person who's trying to legally gather signatures for initiatives and to essentially assist the democratic process while, you know, making enough money to pay the rent. That's also an important thing. Stay with us.
I am a notary. I get stronger every day. I come up in an acorn, but I didn't have much to say. Here I am is where I'll be, and here is where I'll stay, till the cold wind comes and blows my leaves away. You are a willow, and you bend with every breeze, wading through the meadow with the water around your knees. Give that much away. When the cold wind comes, it blows your leaves away. Then there's old Jack Pine, lonesome all the time, halfway up the hillside just to watch the river wind. Some folks think he's singing, but there's them that's where he's crying. And when the cold wind comes, old Jack don't pay no mind. That north wind don't believe me, but I'm bound to make it through. One more time to watch the sunrise like we used to do. There to shade, I will lift my arms to pray, till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Then there's old Jack Pine, lonesome all the time, halfway up the hillside just to watch the river wind. Some folks think he's singing, but there's them that's where he's crying. When the cold wind comes, old Jack don't pay no mind. I am an oak tree, I get stronger every day. I come up from an acorn, but I didn't have much to say. Shade me, I will lift my arms to pray, till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away. Till the cold wind comes and blows our leaves away.
That is Ann Feeney again with her friends, Oak Tree. I guess it's one of her friends that time. This is Free Radio, 96.3 FM and 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. And I'm Robert Norris. And with me is petitioner Quintus Cornish. Hi, Quintus. Let's see if your mic is working. Say hello.
Hello.
I think it's working. Boy, you had quite a story to tell me, and We kind of ran into each other, I guess it was yesterday downtown?
A couple of days ago.
Right. And you, well, why don't you begin at the beginning and tell me, you've been petitioning for a while, right?
I would say probably like 5 or 6 years.
And Is this sort of a major source of income for you? Is this what you primarily do? Or?
When I'm doing it, it's my only source of income. So, I mean, I've done other, you know, other lines of work. I don't know, being a waiter or a bartender or whatever. But primarily, I've been a petitioner.
And you're a local person, pretty much?
No, right now I'm not local. I'm traveling with the Marijuana Policy Project to strategic congressional districts. But I have lived in Santa Cruz for 5 or 6 years at one point, and when I get a chance, I revisit the town because I like it here.
Uh-huh. So this time, you've been in town how long?
I'm thinking I've been in town about a month, maybe a little longer.
And during that time, you've run into some peculiar police reaction to what one might think is a kind of a democratic, rather routine process of trying to acquire signatures in public places, right?
I had a major problem at the Felton New Leaf Market. I've petitioned there before, and... they've actually called the police on me, and the police came out and said I had a constitutional right to be here. And
the deputies?
These are sheriff deputies.
Uh-huh.
Now, this was a couple of years ago. More recently, I was up there, and the manager had asked me to leave, and I told him I had a constitutional right to be here.
Now, you weren't inside the store; you were actually outside the store, and you weren't blocking the entrance, right?
No, I was almost as far from the entrance as you can get. And that's generally, I try to keep distance between the entrance and try to, you know, make it as easy for the store as possible, you know, without, you know, but in any case.
In Felton, at this store, you were on the property of the New Leaf Market and kind of in the parking lot, or how would you describe it? To those who don't know the way the thing is set up.
They kind of have like an outside seating area where people can eat, and it adjoins the parking lot and the street, and it's, you know, it's kind of almost like a courtyard. It's fenced in, like I said. So
okay.
I was, you know, in the back part of that, so I wasn't blocking traffic. Most of the traffic actually comes from the sides of the parking lots, and then there's a foot entrance from the foot walk. So I was closer to the foot entrance where the traffic would essentially be coming beside me, not around me.
Mm-hmm. And you had a table, or you just had a clipboard, or...?
I carry several clipboards, so mm-hmm. I can deal with, you know, multiple people at once if there's that many people interested in the issues I have.
Okay.
But, should I continue?
Sure, go ahead, take it from there.
In any case, they had asked me to leave. I said I had a constitutional right to be there. They went in and called the sheriff, and they came out and said the sheriff said that there was no such constitutional right, mm-hmm. and that they would be here, I guess they said they were going to arrest me. I would imagine like 20 minutes later, two sheriff deputies showed up, and immediately, you know, they got out, you know, were you asked to leave? You know, this is private property, you must leave. And I was like, well, that's actually not the case. There's a Pruneyard decision saying that private property that invites the public, there's certain free expression rights, you know. And, you know, it's prune right, the, you know, the...
This is the decision that essentially kind of okayed petitioning at Safeway if you're a United Farm Workers Union person trying to sign people up for a boycott, things of that sort, or...
It's Prune Yard versus Robinson. It happened in the Prune Yard Shopping Center over in, the town is actually Campbell, over the hill in any case. And it was in 1980, and it was a group of high school students protesting a UN resolution against Zionism, I think. And they had gone to a public shopping center, and the shopping center asked them to leave. And it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court essentially said, you know, that certain public forums, places that are private property, but have, you know, the public, they invite the public, you know, that there are certain free speech, freedom of expression.
Free speech rights for
rights
people there.
Yeah, that apply there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They denied that this, you know, the sheriffs denied that this existed. They said that, you know, they quoted the penal code that it was. And they essentially started screaming at me.
Were people watching all this while this was going on?
There were people watching. As a matter of fact, I was happened to be walking by just because I was, you know, the next day, and somebody, you know, apologized to me that I had to go through that, you know, and that was a customer,
uh-huh.
you know, at New Leaf. And, yeah, there were a few other people, you know, watching it.
This was a couple weeks ago this happened?
No, actually, it was really only a few days ago. In any case, ordinarily, when I'm faced with a situation like this, I have paperwork, so I carry that, you know, kind of, I guess, delineate what the laws actually are.
The Pruniere decision.
Yeah, and I carry various other stuff, too. I didn't have this, and, you know, I was being screamed at by three different people, so I said, you know.
Two deputies and the manager?
Two deputies and the manager, that's correct. So what I did is basically said I didn't feel it necessary to debate them, that I would go get the necessary paperwork and deal with this at a later time. So I left. And
in other words, they successfully, at that point, intimidated you from exercising your First Amendment rights.
Yeah, I would say so. I wasn't willing to be arrested at that point. I was shook up beyond almost to the point of not really being that coherent, you know, in my speech and being able to carry it out.
It's kind of hard when men with guns, and I take it these were two men?
Two men, yes.
Are, you know, in essence, you know, stripping you of your rights and, you know, forcing you to leave, kind of ripping you out of the context that you've always been accustomed to. This hasn't happened to you before recently, or
has it? Actually, the same store I'd been at, and the police officers told me, you know, came and told the manager I had
got the opposite reaction.
And that's
from
the same sheriff department, yes.
Huh. And this was 2 years before?
I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years. But
and you were in the same kind of area in the courtyard doing the same kind of thing, petitioning?
It was exactly the same situation, yeah.
But it wasn't the same manager.
I may have even been the same manager, which I think that's, you know, they know what the laws are, too. They just use it. They kind of try to intimidate people as well.
Do you know the name of this manager?
I could probably find that out.
Please do. I always like to hold people accountable for what they do on this station.
That sounds like a good idea to me.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, I did actually follow through and go on the internet and get all this paperwork. And I was going to return to Felton. And, you know, I was considering working or just, you know, maybe actually. I did also make an appointment with a senior sheriff as well, which I had not been to at this point. But I had all the paperwork that essentially delineated the prune yard and various other things of that sort. And I saw a sheriff, essentially, you know, I was walking from the Felton Fair, which is where the Safeway is, and it's a few blocks from the Felton New Leaf. And I saw a sheriff, and I figured I might be able to resolve it there, so I waved him over.
Uh-huh.
And
this was yesterday or the day before or something?
Oh, gosh. I'm thinking that was on Friday.
So
yeah, it was
day
Friday.
Before yesterday. Yeah, okay.
Okay, but in any so, you know, I told him the problem I had. I said that they, you know, I think I was speaking with younger deputies, and they may not have been familiar with the law, and that I did have the paperwork in my bag to show it. And at this point, this sheriff deputy started screaming at me that it was private property, that I didn't have a right to be there, that I was misinformed, and I was I would be glad to show you the paperwork. I have it in my bag. And I'd put my bag down when I was speaking to him. He was pulled off on the shoulder of the road, and I was, you know, essentially facing the driver's side of the door. He said, you know, as I reached down for the bag, he said to remove, you know, to get away from the bag immediately, something like that,
mm-hmm.
or all, you know. And I looked up in there, and he had a gun to my head.
He pulled out a gun.
He had pulled out a gun,
and he put it to your head.
It was pointed towards my head.
I see.
He said, he said that you were to never reach into to a bag in the presence of a police officer. You'll get a screw in your head, and that, you know,
a screw in your head. What, has he had experience? Was he some sort of a prison guard time, I guess, or something? Or?
No, I imagine a screw means a bullet. It's a terminology I've never heard before.
Interesting.
But,
I was thinking of a screwdriver from, or you know, some shiv or something.
He was threatening to shoot me.
Do you know his name?
I didn't get his name. I was a little shooken up. I do think I'd know what his name might be. I haven't made a complaint yet. I did have an appointment with another sheriff officer who said he had me give a description, and he thought it might know what deputy it was.
Did you notice the squad car number or the squad car?
No, I didn't.
It's hard to catch such details when you're being threatened.
When you get a gun pulled on you, what you act? I mean, I could give you a, I gave a good enough physical description. I mean, at this point, I had actually had a meeting this night with another sheriff deputy, which apparently. I have his name actually on a card, but his responsibility is kind of teaching the deputies, you know, what the law is and making sure they're enforcing it right.
Right.
And, you know, he was a lot less of a meathead, you know.
You met him in his office?
Actually, I met him in front of the courthouse, but, I mean, you know, he talked to me in a civil manner, you know.
You know his name?
I actually do have his card, and, I mean, you know.
So I'm really eager to get the name of this guy who pulled the gun on you, not to mention the two clowns who threatened you away from the center.
That I don't know. Actually, unfortunately, I know the name of the person who actually dealt with us a little more professionally, which would be, it's kind of backwards, but, well, wait a minute. Is his name, or is this just the card? I might be incorrect about this.
Okay.
I believe the name of the...
Sergeant Wilson, looks like, perhaps?
Craig Wilson is the... Yeah, that's who I actually had an appointment with, and I don't really have any fault with how he dealt with things. I'm very professional.
And the man with the gun who threatened you, what did he look like?
Oh, geez, he had a mustache. He was driving, like, not one of the cars, but one of the, like, Jeep Cherokee-type things they have. He was a little more heavy set. You know, honestly, I mean,
accent, was he white? Was he?
Yeah, well, he was definitely white.
What was the approximate height?
Well, he was sitting down. He was in his driver's seat.
So you couldn't tell.
I wouldn't say. I would assume he was a little shorter than myself, which is 6 foot. But
how do you account for his reaction? I mean, do you think he? I'm sorry, I was interrupting you there. But anything more about details about the way he looked?
How do I account for his action?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean. You know, I mean, I think he didn't like me, and that's why he reacted in that manner, and he didn't like what I was doing.
You had no previous interaction with this guy.
No, I haven't. But, I mean, you know, he was aware of what, you know, I was talking about. And as it happened, he was on a call for somebody I'd employed that was actually working at the New Leaf currently at that time.
For petitioning without balance sufficiently low to the manager, or what was the so-called crime or concern that the officer had for that person?
Well, they didn't have any concern other than the manager didn't want petitioners.
They wanted to get him out of there too.
Yeah, they've decided. I mean, there've been quite a bit of petitioners at New Leaf.
Maybe we should all show up at the New Leaf and talk to this man. I mean, in the most peaceful possible fashion.
Yeah, so
with a petition in hand.
He was actually about 100 yards from a call where he had approached. Yeah, he after talking to me, he drove up to somebody that works for me. Excuse me.
Uh-huh.
And he approached them, and actually, my employee had the. You know, the sense to actually have the Pruneyard decision on him.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, this officer, which said that it didn't mean anything.
He'd previously talked to your employee who had showed him the Pruneyard decision.
No, he was in route when I stopped, waved him over to talk to my employee. I wouldn't say my employee because he's not really an employee. He's an independent
contracting agent.
Yeah. But in any case, he was in transit to talk to him, so he would just been called to remove a petitioner, so...
Did you ever find out what happened in that situation?
Yeah. I was walking up to the New Leaf. I was only a few hundred yards from there. As a matter of fact,
I'm going to dump my pants if that kind of thing happened to me. I mean, I don't know. You continued on your trek even after being threatened with a gun.
Well, what I did is I went up towards the New Leaf, and I went to the coffee shop across the street and got a water because it was really hot to basically collect myself. And I noticed my employee walking off. And I, you know, somebody, it's another of my employees, or I shouldn't say employee, but I'm using
people you work with, petitioners.
My petitioners, uh-huh. Had told me that this guy had been working at the New Leaf, but that he'd had some problems. And this was somebody that was at the Safeway, which incidentally, Safeway hasn't given anybody any problems whatsoever. Which it kind of surprised you that it would happen.
It's kind of ironic. We had problems with New Leaf too for their failure to support the rights of people downtown to have that open space area in front of the New Leaf. They allowed the two kiosks to pressure the city council or collude with the city council in closing it all down to get rid of the young people. So New Leaf seems to be in many respects less progressive in spite of its progressive
veneer. Walmart or, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, sort of down home, local bigotry seems to, you know, be, maybe it has to do with some of the staff they have there. I can't imagine,
well, actually,
you know.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but most of the staff was very friendly.
Okay.
Most of the staff signed my...
Except for the manager.
Most of the staff, at the very least, you know, they signed my marijuana policy project, which is my lead issue and the one I care about the most.
What was the petition for that you were circulating? What exactly were you...
It's not a petition at all, actually. Well, I actually did have several petitions, but the primary issue that I was talking to people with and leading with was an email contact list for the Marijuana Policy Project.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is essentially is kind of like an automated letter forwarding system.
Mm-hmm.
They tell people about votes that might be coming up in Congress, and then we have a link they can click on, and what it'll do is forward a fax to our server.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is definitely controversial, because, you know, what I'm saying is, you know, hey, can you help us keep marijuana legal in California?
Not terribly controversial in Santa Cruz, where medical marijuana received, what, 70, 75% votes in the early 90s. We're one of the first counties.
Well, the New Leaf management didn't seem comfortable with the issue.
Well, maybe they should, you know, smoke a little more. Well, what am I saying? You spoke to the employee that this sheriff contacted after he did a little gunplay with you?
Did I speak with who?
Did you speak with the, you said you... Did,
oh, Craig Wilson?
No. The individual that at the New Leaf that the sheriff who had done the gunplay with you then was on his way to contact. Did you talk to that? Did he contact the person? What happened? After he finished talking to you?
Oh no, he threw my employee off. I mean, he, you know, basically intimidated him out of leaving. This is after he was shown the Pruneyard decision. He said it didn't mean anything. He said a constitutional ruling didn't mean anything.
Well, it doesn't if the police don't want it to. That's the problem. Of course it does. But, you know, I'm saying that in practice, unless you have an attorney to back you up, or unless you have the willingness to do an improper case yourself, you get to face the force of the deputy sheriffs or the Santa Cruz police simply for exerting relatively simple, agreed-upon constitutional rights. At least that's what I've found.
You know, you're very correct in that. In a lot of cases, civil rights are abused because people don't have the resources to fight.
Yeah.
They don't have the money to pay a lawyer. You know, I mean the ACLU couldn't even begin to touch, you know, 99.9% of these cases because they'd be overwhelmed.
Have you called them about this case?
No, I actually do intend on calling the ACLU and see if I can get some support from them.
Don't get your hopes too high, but, you know, they have grown as an organization in the last couple of years, but with all the brouhaha around the Patriot Act. But ask them to rein in local misconduct, and they may not be so interested. But I'd be curious to hear how they respond to your calls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you decide you want to go up there again, I'd be happy to go there with you, and I would invite listeners to come with me with some petitions, to do some petitioning in the New Leaf. And
not in the New Leaf.
Well, I mean in the courtyard of the New Leaf, wherever it is, on the New Leaf property. Not inside the store, but, you know, where it's authorized by the Pruneyard decision, where it's normally done without harassment, at least in the past, at least not. The harassment has been stopped by the deputies apparently 2 years ago. You intend to go up there again?
I actually did work there after this, but not on the courtyard. What I actually did, as I went to what was public property where the crosswalk ends, and I yelled at people from 50 or 60 yards away,
right?
Like, hey, miss, we need your help. We're trying to keep marijuana legal for medical purposes, and wave people over. And even then I had a pretty decent response. People were walking. They're, why are you out here? Well, this is a free speech zone. There's no free speech on, you know, New Leaf property. And that's, you know... I mean,
no, I would be happy to even take a bus if necessary.
I did that just to make a point, obviously, but I did that for about 3 or 4 hours.
Well, I understand you may have a camcorder yourself.
No, unfortunately, I don't have a camcorder, although I'm sure I can find somebody that does. If I do proceed with this, I'm probably going to contact an attorney beforehand and go up with an attorney and a camcorder. Another thing, since I have been working on an email list for the next 5 or 6 months, I could probably send an email out to the 7,000 or 8,000 people that have signed my thing and have them do a survey of how if I approached them in a polite manner and if it was aggressive and so on.
So the manager had complained that you had somehow been inappropriate with customers and that was why he was asking you to leave?
They claimed they had complaints, but
Did they specify what the nature of the complaints were?
No, actually they didn't. Something, though, I only asked people on the way out, you know, and I didn't notice anybody, you know, go back in the store. So if anybody did complain, I guess they called on the telephone.
Maybe there was a psychic communication with the manager. It could be a very sensitive fellow.
It's possible. Well, no, actually, I don't think it is.
Right.
You know what? My response to the medical marijuana thing was, I would estimate about a third of the people signed it. Now, not everybody agrees with it.
Well, some people might agree with you, but might not want to be on an email list.
Oh, yeah, but they don't know it's an email list until it's in their hands.
I see.
But
mm-hmm.
But about a third of the people actually probably did do it. Now, of the other... Now, I mean, I'm probably a lot more effective petitioner just because I've done it for 7-8 years and a lot of people, and I say things in a very, you know, a way that
interests people and clarifies the issue and lures them over, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, a lot of people just said they didn't have time, they were in a hurry, you know, that's a stock excuse.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally people gave me a dirty look, which, you know, I assume they didn't agree with the issue, mm-hmm. or they didn't agree with, you know, people petitioning in front of stores or whatever. But I would think that if there were complaints, it would be a very, very small minority,
you know,
of people.
It sounds like you're, again, see, I think you're blaming, you may be looking to blame yourself when they're really, the blame should definitely go in a different direction.
I'm not blaming myself.
Or you're,
I mean,
you're examining
saying,
your own behavior.
It's possible. I don't think there were complaints, honestly.
Maybe you're wearing the wrong color shirt. Now, if you'd worn a different color shirt, it might have been all, you know, a little better, you know.
Well, no, honestly, I think the manager was lying. But if there were complaints, I mean, that would be understandable,
right,
in a situation like this, but it wouldn't be the majority of the people necessarily.
Well, maybe if you were a little younger, a little older, maybe things have been a little different. No, but I'm saying I would encourage you not to examine yourself so much as to steel yourself to deal with this kind of shit, because this is not just happening to you. I should say also that you're a relatively clean-cut person. Your clothes are clean, you're clean-shaven, your haircut is short. Not a young Republican, but certainly, you know, you're not a wild-eyed, long-haired, freakish type person like your host here. I mean,
you're right. Generally, people that don't look as clean-cut as me have a lot more problems.
Really? I want to talk about that, too.
Let's
get this call.
Okay.
And see what the general public has to say. Call back. There you go. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Quintus and Robert.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm surprised you'd even discuss what he looks like or any of that. I mean, this is a horrible violation of First Amendment rights. And in my case, what I'd do, what I've always done in these situations, is refuse to do what the police say. And you'd have an excellent lawsuit. It would take a little while for you to collect the money, but I mean, it's in the bank in terms of you being able to challenge this. This is a clear and blatant violation of First Amendment rights. So.
We're actually talking to someone who has successfully sued the Santa Cruz Police Department, and actually you won a case recently that I was going to call you about. This is infamous Steve Argue, no?
Yes.
Hey, Steve, thank you for calling in.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is outrageous, and I think the general public should be outraged that, you know, I mean, the police know better, or this is the sheriff's department, I assume, actually. They know the laws, and they always want to bend the laws. They always want to push the envelope in terms of taking away free speech rights, and they're able to get away with it to the extent that people will back down. And I think it's important for people to stand up to them and not back down, and that's best done when there's videotapes around and or witnesses or things like that. But you know, these types of things, most of the times when I've challenged them and refused to do what they say in different free speech situations like this, most of the time the police will go away. They'll call superiors and they'll go away, because then they'll get corrected by someone else. But if you don't call them on it, and if you're willing to let them bully you around, a lot of times your rights are lost right there and then. So I think it's important to challenge them, although it can be risky, and people do have to know the risks that potentially you could go to jail, and also that the police are basically violent animals a lot of times that could turn on you anytime and could hurt you. So, I mean, and people are aware of that, and people are intimidated by them, but I think it's important for people to stand up for these rights and not be intimidated.
Steve, let me have Quintus react to this. You want to stay on the line and
sure.
Do a little dialogue here? Go ahead.
Sure.
Any thoughts on that, Quintus?
Generally, it has been my policy essentially to try to back them down, but not generally without actually having the Prunyard decision with me and other relevant decisions. There are some problems with this because there have been recent court rulings which cloud the issue. An example would be Wehrmacht versus Progressive. And essentially what happened in this case, they had a petitioner in front of actually Wehrmacht's corporate name. It's actually
it's a corporation.
In any case, it's a big box store. But what they argued was is that they're not a public forum because they don't have there's a huge list of things. They don't have any billboards. They don't have places for people to sit or can generate. They don't serve any food. They're a standalone store, so they're parking, which essentially means they don't have. It's not a parking. It's not a shopping center that has a variety of stores. It's just one store, and they were actually successful in saying they were not a public forum. Now, generally, the earmarks of a public forum. The earmarks of a public forum, the NUI definitely has. It does have places to sit and can generate. It has, it serves food that people eat on premise. It has a billboard. It's allowed other petitioners. It's allowed other civic groups, political groups, and stuff like that. So, it'd be discriminatory for them. So, but the problem is because of these rulings, you have police officers essentially, interpreting them. But I wouldn't want to do that. As the case was, I didn't want to do it without the paperwork, without it being videotaped, because it's a little shaky now, and I wouldn't want to have a case that I wasn't going to win. So I've backed down people in the situation you're talking about. I've told them that, well, those were my rights. Here's the paperwork that proves it. And they have indeed backed off. And as a matter of fact, Craig Wilson, the guy that I actually had an appointment with and talked to, his response was, I may have a right to work here. The sheriff department would not arrest me. If the store said I was doing something inappropriate, they could make a citizen's arrest and they could take civil liability for it. And that's the sheriff department's actual stance on it. It's not what the deputies that I encountered said, but after talking to somebody more senior, that is their stance on it.
And that's another option. You can always call for the backup. Say, well, call your sergeant if you got any problems, or arrest me, or else leave me alone. I'm trying to do my petitioning. Steve, any thoughts?
Well, in any respect, I encourage people to try to get, to stand up to them. But either way, the fact that you back down, your First Amendment rights were violated, and everybody's First Amendment rights were violated. And I think you should file for damages now, and look at what kind of witnesses you have. And there's various ways of doing it, but. I think it's an outrageous thing that happened to you, and I'm on your side.
I appreciate that. Thank you,
Steve. If you like calling back, or you want to talk about your?
I'll call back.
Yeah, call back. Talk about your case.
Okay.
We're here in the studio with Quintus Cornish. I'm Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and you can call in at 427-3772 if you have any thoughts. Yeah, Quintus, I've been arrested several times for doing what you've done in the farmer's market. I was petitioning. Oh, for the restoration of public space so they stop harassing musicians and things of that sort. The manager of the farmer's market several years ago, right after 9/11, decided I was a terrorist threat, or at least disturbance of the peace, or trespassing, and she had to file a citizen's complaint about it, but the police escalated the issue by having me arrested instead of citing me. That was Sergeant Baker here, a local Santa Cruz police, and Baker is actually, I'm suing him in federal court for another arrest in front of New Leaf Market. Interestingly enough, here in Santa Cruz, New Leaf didn't do it. It was Matisse Selman of Sushi Now when we were protesting the setting up of that barrier, the fence in front of New Leaf, by petitioning, asking people to sign petitions against it and so forth. And they had us removed illegally. So, yeah, I second what Steve has to say. If any of these people, particularly the person who's talked to you the next day, wants to be a witness, certainly get their phone numbers, their names. Because even though you can, you might, chat with the, with Wilson or his superior and get some satisfaction that way, the thing they really understand is either a lawsuit or a successful lawsuit or the threat of a lawsuit. As I found, for example, Scott Kennedy, our mayor, responded to when he wouldn't say a word about what these decorum rules were at city council that he was arresting people for violating, or warning people that he would arrest. Even when an attorney wrote him a letter saying, what the hell are these decorum rules, repeatedly Kennedy had nothing to say. But when I threatened a lawsuit against him for making a libelous statement about me, he immediately issued a full retraction, not immediately, but after a delay, issued a full retraction and made a response. So they understand these kinds of legal threats. They don't seem to pay much attention to the mediation approach. We have a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Quintus and Robert.
Robert, hi, it's Chris Fredrickson.
Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
Long time no here. It's good to see you again. I saw you in the law library the
other
day.
I've been listening with some interest about the petitioning stuff. I, however, have something off subject that I just was hoping I could put
Slip
out
in.
On the show.
Sure, go ahead.
I have been advocating for a family, a homeless family, and they have become friends, and I'm very concerned about them, and I'm hoping that it would be okay if I just put this out on the air.
Sure.
Mother and two teenagers who ran into some very, very serious people down at the Homeless Resource Center, some dangerous people. And suffice it to say, some of those people are now behind bars, but I have been housing them, protecting them at my house, and my landlady has said I cannot any longer do that. They are in line for families in transition, but that process, as you probably know, takes a few months. So I am putting it out there to housed people and non-housed people that they need shelter. Anything from tent space to an RV to, you know, a few nights on a floor, just protection. It's absolutely imperative that they not go back to the shelter.
The shelter would be the ISSP program,
the loft,
church and
the
armory.
The shelter, the church, any of it. It's I hate to be dramatic, but their lives would be in danger.
Wait a minute now. Ken Cole, the Homeless Service Center, could certainly protect them, right?
Robert, let's get
Sorry.
Real. They're part of the whole thing. And I'm sure I'm going to have a really juicy story for you in about 2 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know that Cole and not Cole, but some of the staff at the Homeless Service Center were accused by Matthew and Nikki of not just drug dealing, but excluding people from the Homeless Service Center for...
Well, they know about this. They're in fact part of the whole thing. And this has gone as far as car bomb. Yeah.
Sounds
and
like we should call the FBI. Never call the FBI is always a good motto.
Right. It's being handled by actually some very good cooperation, to my surprise, by local DAs, the local DAs and investigators. But it's absolutely imperative that they not go back there.
You got a phone number, Chris, that people can call or some kind of way they can reach you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Email address.
They can reach me at either on my cell number at 227-4345 or my home number, which is 447-0187.
It's 227-4345 or 447-0187?
Right.
Okay.
And they're going to need any kind of safe shelter probably for the next couple of months. And as I said, that could look like anything from tent space in a backyard to an empty RV to a couple nights on a floor. And these are very wonderful, loving, mellow
folks.
Well,
maybe Mayor Kennedy would offer his backyard. He's always been very
generous. I could call him. He's not on my list to call today.
You might give him a quick call.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, well, he's the mayor of the town, and he's the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
You know, I didn't even think about that because this is potentially very
a
potentially violent situation.
He's a supporter of the sleeping ban. He feels the sleeping ban is a good law because it protects homeless people from...
Yes. And
so
we,
maybe he can assist in this protection approach.
Yes, assist in the protection because of the damn thing.
Yeah, protection
but,
racket, so to speak.
But as I said, I'm probably going to have a very juicy story for you in a couple months on this whole thing. But right now it's too complicated and a little too scary to go into. But these people are in danger and they really need some protection and some help.
Give a call to Chris then. Anyone out there has any possible help here for like a temporary lodging? 227-4345-447-0187. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, or ideas. I was going to say anybody that, you know, can pass me on to somebody else. I mean, we're looking. My landlady has drawn the line. I've got another 24 hours to try to get them into another protected space.
And 24 hours. Okay. Well, let's see what we can do.
It's dire.
I mean, I should say the number's out there. I hope folks can do something.
Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM. Still with us in the studio, the patient Quintus Cornish, who is describing how the Pruneyard decision, which originally said if it looks like a public forum, even if it's on private property, but it's open to the public, then there are certain rights like petitioners, those are petitioners and people giving out leaflets that have to be respected. Has this been restricted more recently, Quintus, to, you know, like, I mean, can they set up these protest pens that we see that happened, like, with Bush, where you can protest, but only, you know, in a little block 40 miles away from the center of the action, or what?
Well, they've always had time, place, and manner restrictions that they're allowed to do, but they're not supposed to, that's very subjective. I mean, they've always said that they can't be, oh, gosh, I'm trying to think of the court's words on this. It could be argued that if they want you, they can't be overly restrictive. The restrictions are meant to, you know, keep doors open so people can actually get in and out of them, you know, in retail areas.
Mm-hmm.
They're meant, really, that's really the only real reason they're supposed to have these type of restrictions. Oh, and so you don't have conflicting interests at a store at the same time, so... You don't want to have Girl Scout cookies, you know, somebody selling Girl Scout cookies, somebody petitioning for one issue, and then somebody else petitioning for another issue because it'd be overwhelming to the customer. So that's what these types of regulations are, time, place, and manner restrictions are supposed to address.
How many different kind of venues have you petitioned in the last year or so? I mean, have you been, it sounds like you've been to a number of different places. Right?
Well, I've petitioned all over California. I've petitioned in Washington State many times.
But let's say, how many different buildings or areas have you been doing this in that might be equivalent to New Leaf and not been hassled?
Oh, hundreds and hundreds of buildings. I mean, usually there's a little dialogue that goes on, and it depends on the state, too. The laws are different from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been to states where there's nothing like the Pruneyard decision, and you don't have any right to be in...
What states are those?
Oh, Arizona would be a good example of a state like that. Ohio would be a good example of a state like that.
Hmm.
you know, and...
Because Pruneyard is a state decision, not a federal one, right?
It's a state... It was in the... I'm sorry, I didn't clarify that. It's...
Now, you're protected under the... Is it because it's a... Is there a statute that protects you, or is it the California Constitution that protects you, or is it... something else that protects you under the Pruneyard decision?
You know, I don't know the actual details of the California Constitution, but it was an interpretation of, you know, it was the judge's in 1980s interpretation of
California Supreme Court or U.S. Supreme Court?
The California.
Right, I see.
Now, it's very possible the composition of the court has changed, and it's possible that the judgment could be different in the future.
Well, you say there was a Pruneyard modification that allowed some... further expansion of private power and exclusion of petitioners, but it still left, you felt, obviously because you're still using the Pruneyard decision, the essence of the Pruneyard decision is still in place in California, right?
Well, this Pruneyard decision has not been overturned. There have been, basically the argument's been over what types of private property qualify as public forums. So, I mean, basically... The companies that have successfully argued that they are not a public forum are, that I know of, are Costco, which is a private club, and Walmart, which they are all standalone stores, and they don't have anything in front of their store whatsoever, be it charitable, civic, or you know. Or you know, whatever, you know.
What stores in Santa Cruz would you say are most areas in Santa Cruz, as far as your understanding? I know you're not a lawyer, but you have done some on-the-scene research in this. I mean, you're out there doing this work. What wouldn't qualify for Pruneyard protection, and what would?
Well, these cases are specific, you know. When Walmart, you know, sued and said it was, you know, it wasn't a public forum, only Walmart, you know, They were successful, but only for their stores. It didn't mean any other store was necessarily. It could be used as a precedent if another store wanted to go through the legal proceedings and do that.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know,
every place in Santa Cruz, which is, I say, open courtyards and is open to the public.
The only place in Santa Cruz that I know of that is not considered a public forum would be the Costco.
Okay, because of the private club thing.
Because it's a private club. You have to
and because it did a specific lawsuit. There may be other private clubs who buy a membership that are still considered public forums until they sue. Is that proper? Or?
That's my understanding of it.
Right. Wow. Well, I... you know, it's always good to with hindsight to think, well, I want to, you know, it might have been best if I had stayed and made a stand and so forth. And I'm not saying that you should have done this. I know that I have this thought. The police often harass us for tabling downtown. And I know the last time I was on the air, by the way, those who are listening, some of us are trying to do a table downtown with a radio on it that's broadcasting the show at the same time. So those who don't have a radio can listen to it and maybe call in if they have thoughts. And Michael and Valerie and Bob did this last Thursday. And I thought it was going to happen again today. And I put that information on the Indie Media website, but it looks like it's not happening. When I came by, the folks weren't there to do any tabling. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any table there today on the in front of Borders, where we were going to be providing an open radio and, you know, some literature and some petitions and an option to call in, not necessarily with a cellular phone. We're looking for that, but who knows? Just, you know, encouraging people to call in on their own dime, pretty much. But that's not happening today, but it may happen again next Thursday when the show resumes. The show also airs 6 to 8 on Thursday evenings. And again, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, Robert North speaking, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, and www.freakradio.org is where we stream live on the Internet. Call in number 427-3772. And I've been talking in the studio with Quintus Cornish, who is getting some pretty nasty and sounds like unconstitutional treatment. You know, it seems to me if some or private citizen had done this, you know, there'd be a manhunt out for a guy putting his gun to people's face. You know, but give this guy a badge and a uniform, and hey, they're all over you.
Absolutely, yeah. I was just thinking that on the way over here. As a matter of fact, that you know, I don't know. You know, that if I had talked to somebody and I said I had, you know, my phone number in my bag, let me get it for you, and they pulled a gun out of me, they would most definitely be in jail right now. Yeah, I mean...
Sure.
You know, because, I mean, you know...
They can't even carry a gun.
Private citizen say that? You know, oh, somebody was reaching in a bag, somebody was reaching in their purse, so I pulled, you know, I was afraid that they were going to pull a gun on me. I mean, that's ridiculous, you know?
It's a paranoia, institutionalized state of paranoia that you see all over the place. And that is sort of, it's the basis for asserting more and more power by police departments. And it's, of course, it's a death of a free society, as far as I can see, if we ever want to get one, which would be, you know, a free society is like Gandhi said about Western civilization, it would be a good thing, you know. What do you think of Western civilization, he was asked. He said, oh, that would be a good thing. So, lots of things coming up on the show for those who just tuned in. We have, there's a city council meeting on Tuesday. I'm going to briefly talk about that. I'm going to invite Quintus to hang in the studio in case more people decide to call in to discuss his issue. I think we may have covered as much of it as, I'm happy with what we've done so far. Anything you want to add to this situation right now, Quintus? Any further thoughts or...
Well,
are you looking for some support? Are you asking, looking for a legal support? Do you want some people to, you want to have a meeting of people who want to go up there and, you know, peacefully petition at New Leaf, which I think is a fine idea. You know, the best response to repression is resistance of a public sort and a peaceful sort.
Well, I think I would appreciate any kind of support I could get, although I want to hold back a little bit and think strategically about how I would do it. You know, I'm a big believer not in activism and practical activism that's going to work and not necessarily.
Sure, no, I understand. Well, tell you what, if anybody wants to volunteer to help or wants more information on this subject, I have Quintus's number. If you call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, I'll pass on messages to you and potential sources of support, and we'll take it maybe from there. But please keep us advised, Quintus, of what's going on. I mean, you know, if We don't want you to disappear down some creek, you know, because for resisting arrest, you know, shot while pulling out a pencil. I don't know what, you know, the next thing is going to be.
You know, I think I had some paranoia about things like that, but I was thinking it was just paranoia. Maybe not. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't either. Anyway, I'm going to, I guess what I'll do now is I'll turn to, we'll do a little bit of a musical break.
Oh, it happened to Barbara Wolvovitz, but it could have happened to me. Her husband's name is Jules Lobel. She has a law degree, and the clients that she serves are victims of discrimination. But she joined her client's ranks one day in the course of litigation. In the third week of a jury trial, the judge said to a witness, "I'm sick of all this Ms. nonsense. Tell me, are you Miss or Mrs.? And while we're on the subject, honey, let me ask you this. Just how does Mr. Wolfovitz feel about you using Ms.?" "Your Honor," answered Barbara, "I guess you must mean my dad. I am a married woman, but the only name I've had from the day that I was born, although I married Jules Lobel, is Wolfovitz. That's Wolfovitz, and I think it suits me well." Well, the Honorable Hubert Teitelbaum recoiled in indignation. What kind of man would tolerate such insubordination? Now my courtroom is my kingdom, and my orders will prevail. From now on, you're Mrs. Lubin, or you'll spend the night in jail. Now Lubin was a name the judge had pulled out of thin air. Some of you who hear this may think that was unfair. But what difference does it make? That was not her husband's surname. He might as well pick Lubin if he won't let her use her name. The story hit the paper, then the hit the fan. People started asking more about this Stone Age man. Now, who made a jerk like that a judge? Oh, come on. Who puts a fix in? It's another white male millionaire. Remember Richard Nixon? Now, you might think this story is an isolated case, but misery in the courtroom is all too commonplace. So the next time that you go to vote, there's that pesky fly in the ointment. You're not just electing a president, but all of his appointments. I'm talking Rehnquist and Berger and Kennedy and Scalia and O'Connor. Is that one you supported? Then there's Carswell and Hainsworth and Ginsburg. They're the ones that we aborted. Once they're in, they're only out on high crimes or misdemeanors. And with George Bush in the White House, we've been looking at the real.
That, again, was Ann Feeney from Ann Feeney and Friends. I'm going to play a little bit now from the Thursday show Aftermath. You may remember I just mentioned that we had a table on the mall where people could actually hear this show directly from a radio. And here's some of the interviewing that happened at that table while this show was going on 3 days ago on Thursday.
Hey, we just got a report that Pam Bechtel tonight had given someone a ticket. And do you want to tell your name? Say your first name.
Yeah, Lee. I'm Lee. Pam gave me a ticket today for basically just setting my ass cheeks on the cement within 50 feet of a money machine. So I guess the logic is supposed to be that, like, if you're within 50 feet of a change machine, like, you'll intimidate people that are, like, gonna get change or something.
Yeah. 50, it's not 14 feet.
Yeah, it's 50.
50, that's a lot.
50. I was sitting on the farthest bench over there, where, like, right next to the third tree down there.
Huh.
Yeah, and...
And you're sitting in a bench too. You're not sitting on the street.
I was sitting on the street because three people were sitting on the bench.
So you were near a bench.
But it's not even within earshot of the change machine. I wasn't even like someone couldn't have heard me say anything near a change machine. It's,
no, of course not.
I don't see why I'm sure it doesn't bother anyone.
No, it was way far away. That's ridiculous. Well, that's Pam. She's trying to do this thing she's done with us. Is just basically make us feel uncomfortable so we don't feel welcome.
Yeah. My theory is that they put the changing machine in there because they were tired of mass people congregating there and being comfortable on the streets and benches.
Yep, I think that's...
And so they were trying... They were having some kind of weak attempt to reduce, like, the population on a hippie corner, but... It didn't really work. Like, now they just give bullshit tickets to everyone, like, once a week, you know, about some stupid sitting down. Like, according to what America's all about, I mean, you should be able to sit down.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. Natural right since, like, ever.
The crazy part is that I don't think there is an ordinance that says you can be 50 feet away from... I think she made this up as she made up ours before.
It really does exist.
There's an ordinance she showed you.
I've gotten two tickets for it, actually.
And she showed you there was an ordinance in her book?
Well, I know there is, because I read the panhandling rules, and it says you can't panhandle within 50 feet or sit down within 50 feet of a change machine, and that's just lame. It needs to be changed. That's stupid.
Well, it's really, like, they're just trying to make us feel unwelcome.
Like, I don't know if the law was made before or after that particular change machine was put here, but that's weak.
No, it's just inhuman.
It is, dude. Like, doing the most harmless things that nobody cares about and nobody is going to be bothered by or even damage any part of anything. It's just stupid.
Yep, they're basically just trying to make you feel like you're not welcome here because you're sitting and you're not getting, buying things.
We're not buying shit from the stores, so we're not feeding into the corporate idea of consumerism, which everybody seems to think is normal, which is, it's terrible, dude.
Did they charge you? Is there a certain amount of money you've been charged for?
I'm sure it's something jacked up and ridiculous, like...
Yeah. You have a court date?
Yeah, I burned my ticket already, though.
You burned it?
Okay,
so you're not too worried about...
No, they didn't take my license. I refuse to pay a ticket for sitting down. I burnt my ticket today.
Well, we appreciate your support in fighting the crazy rules around here. That's what we're doing. I don't know if you have a phone number, if you can sign up on a petition and we get a hold... Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of us that are doing this stuff can't get involved in that way. But we want to support you. That's what we're here for, is to back people up and say, hey, you know, this is ridiculous, and we're trying to protest it. And here you are doing it all by yourself. Good for you.
like, in my opinion, I think all municipal codes are total bullshit. Like, almost every single one of them. Like, no dogs in the park. Like, just stupid stuff like that. It's just, like,
it's a power thing.
Petty stuff that you'll do to get someone to go to jail for because they won't pay the stupid ticket for a stupid thing that no one takes seriously because you're sitting down or owning a dog within a certain area, you know, it's like...
Well, they think if they do this, then they'll make you leave and then they don't have to deal with you anymore and...
The worst that'll happen is we'll just move to some other spot down the corner. And
there you go.
And then they'll put another change machine, and then we'll just migrate until there's change machines every 10 feet.
Of course, they're supposed to be here, not us, you know.
Yeah.
they're the ones who have the rule the place here.
I'm so fed up with the police of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it's really very unfair, and I appreciate you sharing this. We're going to share it with others, and... try to let people know how ridiculous it is. Some people are just, oh, no big deal, and then they don't see how strange and weird it really is until they hear stories like
this. The people that have the voices aren't the ones that are getting the tickets. The ones who's...
Right.
That's why you guys are around, to make sure that our voices are heard, because...
Yep, we're trying to.
It's... nobody takes us seriously.
Yep. I really appreciate Robert Norris and his work, and I'm really trying to support him because he's on his own. Doing this with a couple of people, and I realized I got to get involved. And so I just hope more people realize that we have to do this. And this is really, you know, the sleeping ban is just as stupid.
You know.
I mean, we're supposed to sleep. You know, we got to be able to sleep. I mean, this is ridiculous. Give us a chance to sleep here. If we're hidden away and nobody's seeing us, what's wrong with sleeping? You know,
it's like you have to pay the government to become a citizen, to just live legally. You have to pay the government. You just have to.
Yeah.
Lots of money too. Like, not just a little bit, but.
And if you don't have it, then you're a criminal.
Money for everything that you buy.
What happened to America?
Money for existing. Money for making money. Yeah. They need money for fucking. Everything. It's the end of the world. This can't go on much longer without the people just arising and...
Well, that's what we gotta do.
Beating down this stupid ideas of corporate America, and they're just...
We try to bring together more people. The more we gather and know each other, we can do that. We can spread the word, and we can come together and fight. Well, here we've been wanting to start some. We want to get more protesting going, but it's just a matter of getting us together. That's what the petition's for. Of course, like I said, a lot of them don't have phone numbers, so we're going to have to just grab everybody and just start doing it if we're all here. So I'm hoping every Wednesday night we gather in front of the New Leaf.
Yeah.
And we've been trying to get us together so that we can, just doing that, standing here like this with our table, we're already protesting. So the more of us, the better.
You can't sit here for more than 2 hours or some stupid shit like that, or you'll have to move.
Yeah, well,
you
know.
You can't protest without migrating all the time, just like they're trying to do to the avenue.
Yeah, well, I'm proud of you for standing around, going ahead and burning your ticket. We need more people to do that, and then maybe we'll show.